from the Edgar Cayce Association for Research and Enlightenment. This is a special edition of Circle for Original Thinking. I am your host, Glenn Aparicio Perry. Welcome to Circle for Original Thinking, America's electronic talking circle for visionary thinkers, an open forum for fresh ideas and timeless wisdom applied to today's political and ecological challenges. Each episode, we bring together creative thinkers from a variety of different traditions. We ask the hard questions on the important issues of the day: political polarization, climate change, virulent viruses, and other symptoms of humanity being out of balance with the natural world. Our goal is to recreate a whole and sacred America and world, a new and improved version of E Pluribus Unum, from the many to the one, and this time not leave anybody out. Join us as we embark on this quest. When the Buddha was asked, "Are you a reincarnation of God?" he replied, "No." "Are you a wizard then?" "No," again he said. "So what are you?" they asked, intent on knowing. He simply replied, "I am awake." And true enough, Buddha means the awakened one. Buddha's life work was teaching how to awaken. These days, however, there is a backlash against being woke, as if being awake to what is really happening in our country is somehow a bad thing. Many people want to go back to sleep. Can the nation awaken? Does it even want to? One of today's guests, Christopher Naughton, has written a new book all about America's next great awakening. The other, Dr. Nicole Charles, the CEO of Edgar Cayce ARE, is exploring how consciousness can lead to new ways, to new levels, new ways of awakening. So today, we're going to delve into what it means to awaken in these turbulent times. Join us on the next episode of Circle for Original Thinking. And now we need to introduce our guests. The Reverend Dr. Nicole Charles is an ordained interfaith minister holding a doctorate in interfaith theology and has concentrated her career in nonprofit executive management and higher education, working for the United Nations, the Rockefeller Foundation, the National Urban League, Columbia University, and others. And she is, of course, the current CEO of the Edgar Cayce Association for Research and Enlightenment, otherwise known as ARE. And Dr. Christopher, I just gave you a doctorate, but that's all right.
Juris doctor,
it's good enough, yes. Christopher Naughton is a former prosecutor, litigation attorney, and multiple Emmy Award-winning host, the executive producer of the constitutionally based The American Law Journal. He has hosted New World Radio, addressing comparative belief systems. He writes on the intersection of history, law, and spirituality for Medium and Substack magazines, and he lives right here in Virginia Beach, Virginia, with his beloved wife, Valerie, a partner for over 20 years, who we had a wonderful dinner with last night. And I might also mention that Christopher is very much a fan and steeped in the Edgar Cayce teachings as well. So we have a great opportunity today to delve very, very, very deep. So, okay, welcome. How's everybody doing today?
Doing good. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
Good to see you again, Glenn, as always.
Thank you. So, this term woke, you know, it has some negative connotations today, but what does it mean to both of you? What does it mean to be awakened? What does it mean to be awakened? We're going to start with you, Christopher.
Glenn, you always like to start with the easy small questions.
Oh,
that's
yes.
why we love you so much. Well, I mean, obviously, you could almost jump in anywhere. I like what the Buddha had to say about being aware. Benjamin Franklin had once had a statement that went something like this: the unexamined life is not worth living. So I suspect that being awake, without the pejoratives, that it's the connotations that have seemed to have crept up on the word awake today, which I cover in the preface of my book, is to be self-aware and to be aware of a greater consciousness other than our ego self. I would just say, let's begin there. It's much wider, much deeper than that. There are certainly very various levels of awakening, and certainly we can look at the great masters from Jesus to Buddha to Muhammad, etc., to their level of awareness, which ultimately I would think leads to a place where all the great mystics have gone, which is a level of self-awareness, capital S, God awareness, our connection to divinity. You know, we're sitting here in this lovely auditorium here at ARE, and there are, I see three individuals in three separate, you know, meat suits, if you want to go that far. Three separate physical bodies. We know that we have been tasked, if you will, to carry out our own inner divinity in these singular solo vehicles. We get that. And at the same time, we realize that, as Maya Angelou and others have said, there is no other, you know, there's only one of us here. So how do we live with that paradox? How do we live with that dichotomy? Okay, I'm an individual, I have my own pains, I have my own predilections, I have my own biases, etc., but I'm divine. So how do we work with that that seeming contradiction? And yet that perhaps is what our soul, certainly what I think my soul is here to do, is to awaken to my connection with each of us here in this room today, with everyone else who's listening today, that we are ultimately one. We're connected to one consciousness, and we are here to demonstrate the color and the electricity and the joy of that consciousness as singular, solo entities here in this three-dimensional place we call planet Earth.
Beautiful. What a gorgeous answer. And very articulate, if I may add.
And
Nicole, I'm going to ask you the same question, but I'm going to give you one more wrinkle.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you what it means to be awakened to you, but also what it means to be enlightened, because this is, you know, the Edgar Cayce ARE is the Association of Research and Enlightenment.
So, I mean, I don't know if I can really follow, Chris. That you just basically took everything, right? It's very good, great way of looking at it. For me, to be awakened is literally that, to come from one's slumber, to come out of this thing that we know of truth and to begin to understand different viewpoints to get to the truth. I think we're sleeping or we're not woke when we only see our view, because it's a very small view, and it's a very insular view. It is my world, when we know this world has billions, right? That a lot of us refuse to accept or to embrace. And so I think that awokeness is getting out of your comfort zone to be uncomfortable to arrive to the truth. And that is very different for many people. Because everybody wants to hear their voice. Everyone wants to say that I know the way. We even do it in religion. This is the way. And if we go back to the original Torah, the original Tanakh of the Hebraic scriptures, we will realize that it is in a beginning, not in the beginning. And that's the difference. And so we have so many translations until we only know a translation that fits us. And being awakened is allowing divergent ideas to shape your thinking, but doesn't mean you have to adopt it or subscribe to it. But it's to understand it, and it's to respect it, as long as it does not bring harm to another. To me, that's being awoke.
Oh, that's really beautiful. I mean, that speaks to my heart, because, you know, dialogue is very important to me. That's why this podcast is done dialogically. That's why I always have at least two guests on, so that we can have a conversation. It's not an interview, it's a dialogue. Right. And in dialogue, the most important thing is listening, and listening for the purpose of understanding, not just reading your reply. So that's where we kind of go nice and easy here, nice and slow. So there's plenty of time, all the time in the world. That's very beautiful. I really appreciate that answer. Now, you do open, you make me think of one other thing, though. Yeah, so I still want you to get at the
research.
The definition of enlightenment, even. But Edgar Cayce, you know, the funny thing is, a million years ago, maybe it was 50 years ago, I read a book on Edgar Cayce by, I think, Jess Stern, called The Sleeping Prophet. So Edgar Cayce was known as the Sleeping Prophet. And we're talking about, you know, are we awakening or are we in slumber? So how did Edgar Cayce do that? I mean, what did he have to... how was it that he went into this trance state and then was able to actually awaken in the trance? What is that about that paradox that, and then if you can add too, how did that awaken or how does that enlighten him in some way?
Well, I think...
if he claimed that.
I think that that's very, it's a profound question, because in his sleeping, he was awake. And that, I believe, is when we go into meditation, which is what he stood on. The foundation of really communing with God, listening, like prayer to Cayce is seeking God, asking God. When we go to prayer, you know, I thank you for the food, but can you also? There's always these additions, you know, we kind of want to direct the divine to kind of do what we want the divine to do. Cayce believed that meditation was listening to God, being guided by God solely. And that it wasn't, it's literally, your will, not thine. And that is that meditation piece. So he did what he stood on, that to go in is to hear God, because the readings were divinely orchestrated. What he did, not many people, and those who have, I think we all have gifts, but we don't all have the same gift, just like the levels of awokeness, awakeness, or enlightenment, right? I don't think I enjoy food. I don't want to go under a Bodhi tree and fast for months on end to become my enlightened. I don't believe that there always needs to be austerities to get to the other side. Mm. I do think there needs to be a journey, and I do think there sometimes needs to be hardships. But one's enlightenment could be standing always where they are. People think they have to go, you know, climb the mountain, when the mountain is really our issues, our problems, how we choose to stand up in the face of our own adversity and self-hatred. That's the mountain. Mm. It doesn't mean that it has to be a place, a destination, literally.
That's very good. Yeah, it reminds me of something Grandmother Flor de Mayo, she was one of the 13 from the International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers. She happens to live in New Mexico, next to me, in Estancia, New Mexico. And she went through all, you know, she was, her mentor was Don Alejandro Cerillo Oxlog de Perez, you know, the Mayan, head of that Mayan council for a long time out of Guatemala. And he put her through all kinds of arduous tasks and stuff. But then later in her life, she told me once, you know, Glenn, you don't have to suffer to pray.
No.
You don't have to suffer to pray. And I actually, after going on a vision quest out in the wild for a number of days, I then went to Grandmother Flor de Mayo's casita, where there was running water and some food and stuff. But I stayed there for a number of days and had some same visions. So I think she's really right. It's very interesting. What do you think about this, Christopher?
Well, I actually wanted to pose something to Nicole, since we're having a dialogue conversation, right? I think it was you who said that, because we talk about the sleeping prophet, and again, I prefer an American prophet, we can get into that, but the sleeping prophet, that he went into an altered state, and then through him, these 14,000 readings, this flood of information, 9,000 of which were, you know, written for people who had health issues, the other 5,000 dealt with a myriad of topics. But I think it was you who said, it almost had to come through his subconscious or this altered state, because if it had come through his conscious state, people would not have believed him. You did say that, didn't you?
Yeah.
That's kind of an interesting angle when you think about the way that people have accepted the wisdom of the Edgar Cayce material. Is he had to be asleep at that time. Because if he had spoken as a professor from a stage with the same kind of wisdom, they might have looked at him askance.
I think they might have looked at them, but they might not have even listened to him. Because he's coming from his own perspective, his own view, his own understanding. Mm-hmm. And that would have impeded the truth.
Yeah.
Right? So he had to kind of go into this, the realm where the eyes are moving back and forth. You're almost in that state, and then you go in. And I think people have experimented with how he did it, and maybe some have even came through. I think there's, you know, other people, but in terms of what he did at the time and how he did it and how it's still helping people, that wasn't all him. It can't be.
Yeah.
Because it's just too profound, and the stories of, you know, people would go and they would say, I went to the store, but it wasn't there. And he would say, go back, it's at the top shelf in the back to the left side behind this red thing. I mean, to get to such everything. I mean, he saw people's DNA and knew how to reshift it in order for their health to kind of be better. What I also loved about it was it always came first from the spirit. That was the helm, that was the holistic paradigm. It stood for a spirit, that this dis-ease is disease due to this disconnection of your understanding of how you talk to people, how you're moving in the world, this karmic thing you have to get through, and how our health, and I always like use examples of people who might be sick. You know, like if you have a sore throat, well, how are you not speaking? What are you not doing? How are you, you know, closing up the gift to just communicate? Are you telling your truth? Are you living your truth? And so the body will always speak when it is not being honored, because we are the holy of holies, after all.
Mm.
And there were several times, right, in his lifetime where, and a lot of pressure from his wife, Gertrude, like they wanted to live a normal life.
I mean,
Casey was a photographer. He did other things in his life. And when it got to be too much, because he was ostracized even in his church in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and in other places, because it was just too, we'd say today, too woo. It was way too out on the edge, delving into psi phenomena that was completely out of character for a Christian nation, let's put it that way. But every time it seemed like he wanted to step away and quote unquote normalize his life, something else would come in. His son had flash powder, essentially incinerate his eyes. He was going to be blind. Mm. Casey had to go back in and start tapping into the readings. His wife, who wanted to normalize their lives, she contracts tuberculosis at a time where if you got tuberculosis, your next step was the sanitarium, and after that, the cemetery. Mm-hmm. Okay, 97% of the people who contracted tuberculosis. What Casey has to do is he is almost forced to go back into the reading mode, go into an altered state, and he comes up with a very quirky, odd, fantastical remedy, which includes heroin to save his wife's life. So it's interesting, you talk about, you know, those things that put us in the flow of spirit, align ourselves with spirit. Casey had those examples where he was more or less forced, if you will, for the good of his family, to realign with what his destiny and purpose was.
Good. Boy, it's a beautiful conversation. So what we're starting to hone in on is what you're talking about with the normalization of life. That's the narrow family life. That's living by the expectations, the biases, the prejudices, the conceptions of the milieu, what's happening then. But what Edgar Casey was doing, he was opening up to the great collective. What Carl Jung later calls, calling the collective unconscious. In modern times, there's an elder in New Mexico, Joseph Rael, or Beautiful Painted Arrow. He says that in order to get to spirit, you have to actually not exist. You have to blink out of existence. And at that point, then you're open to this spirit flowing through whatever needs to happen. That might be comparable to what you're saying about giving your will over to God's will. I'm not sure, but it seems to me it could be in that same ballpark. So this is an interesting conversation. Now, how much do you think the principles of Edgar Cayce, what he taught, how much of that is flowing into the world now? Is it coming into greater awareness? This ARE has been here a long time. You know, how is that happening now? How is the principles getting out there in the world?
First thing, I think that the principles have always been in the world, and it is up to someone to seek them, to find them, to live in them. So I think information has always been, it always will be, and that is part of the wokeness or the slumber that one chooses. In terms of the growth of the ARE, I have been charged with leading it in a different way to expand more, to assist people in awakening to their spirituality and their awakening of a new consciousness, a new paradigm that they can live under. So we are engaging differently, having guests come in, opening up the doors, doing it in a much more contemporary way, but not taking away the integrity of the organization and the teachings. So my thing was to look where we are not disjointed as a society and where we are one. And so where we're one is in health. We all want it, we can't buy it, but we all yearn for it. And I think when people begin to see how deep health is not just how I feel, but how I stand in the world is my health status, my health state, makes a big difference. So to me, health crosses race, class, creed, ethnicity, age. It crosses every schism of our society and brings us under one umbrella. So I don't stop the flow of the Edgar Cayce material and other, the Akashic Records, Atlantis, and all those other vast things he talks about, reincarnation. But I say, how can you join us? Starts on health. So we started a yoga studio that we are opening up and working with some of the faculty members of Norfolk State to support our dance studio. How do I feel in my body? How rigid am I in that movement of my body? Mm-hmm. Maybe how rigid I am in how I move in life, how I speak to people. You know, so we begin to do it from a holistic standpoint, which is also the spiritual. Having partnerships, really working, seeing the gifts of others, such as Chris, you're here, to kind of, how do we reach out to our fellows? How do we stand together in solidarity with differing views, but with the same voice? That is the oneness. So the theme for me is oneness, which Cayce extols very heavily, oneness, 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 that we are one and we're not separate, but also allowing the individuality, all the components of the divine to stand together so we build the one again. That's how I see it.
All the different aspects, unity
Correct.
And diversity or
Correct.
Something.
Correct. Yeah. Every piece of it, the good and the bad, you can't separate it. I think people are always looking for the good. I even need the challenges. I even need what that dualism of what I would like. I don't want that, but I know I have to have it in order to get what I want. You know, so.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Now I've got a little bit slightly different question for you, Christopher, because your book is about America's next That's great awakening. It's about America specifically. Now, Edgar Cayce spoke about Atlantis. He spoke about, he did speak, and it's not fresh in my memory, but he did speak about America's purpose, I believe. And certainly I remember Ruth Montgomery, who was like another psychic or something, was talking about Atlantis, and Madame Blavatsky in the 19th century was talking about the sacred purpose of America. And Madame Blavatsky was talking about there were lots of, you know, I mean, a whole new root race was going to be created in America from the fact that all the world's peoples were congregating on the same soil, and something new is going to be created. So now your book ends with a revolution of consciousness, you know, and you were hearkening back to Thomas Jefferson and also I think William James, who were talking about how there was going to be this new revolution of consciousness. Mm-hmm. So how is that unfolding now? Do you see that happening, and how does this relate to the Edgar Cayce teachings?
Well, it's interesting, but I think I can tie some of those things together. And I, you know, there have been three major books written on Edgar Cayce's life. There is A River, which came out prior to his death. In fact, some might say it contributed due to his death, because after that book came out, he started getting bags of mail almost every day, and he could not. And the readings told him, don't do so much. That's why we're reminding you, Nicole, take some work-life balance as the CEO here at ARE. take a lesson from Mr. Casey himself, that he would have to dip his hand in the mailbag and let, you know, a spirit lead him to who was supposed to get a reading. So that was the first book on his life by Thomas Chagrou. The second book that you mentioned earlier was The Sleeping Prophet, which came out in 1961. Jeff Stern, a New York Daily News newspaper writer, wrote the book, and that was the one that introduced me to Edgar Casey by happenstance. And then the third one, and the one that I got into most, is An American Prophet, written by Sidney Kirkpatrick, 1999-2000. And I raise that because Edgar Casey is sometimes unfortunately missed by the American public as a uniquely American story, an American mm-hmm. story. Casey mm-hmm. probably could not have happened elsewhere, could not have had the impact. Now, you had asked Nicole, do you see some of Casey's things, you know, emerging in the world? Well, if you turn on the History Channel and watch Ancient Aliens or The Unexplained with William Shatner, none of that would be in our consciousness today without an Edgar Casey, in my humble opinion. Because Casey broke the ceiling when it came between rising fundamental Christianity to the esoteric, unexplained, parapsychological psi phenomena that we, as a nation and as a society, are much more willing to engage than I think we ever have before. Mm. And it's not, again, the castigation of governments or atheists or fundamentalists who call it all woo-woo, but the fact of the matter is we are now seeing that consciousness is not created by our brains, that our brains are filters, and mm-hmm. that we are basically, as Aldous Huxley and Carl Jung said, we are basically funneling consciousness from somewhere else. And William James said it before them. Thank you. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, when you look around our society, whether we're talking about health, if you look at the food pyramid that Mr. Casey came up with, FDA's getting closer and closer mm-hmm. to that, but believe you me, back in 1928 or 30, whenever he came out with it, it wasn't anywhere close. We see meditation as being part of American society. Edgar Casey tripled down on meditation, as Nicole was mentioning just a few moments ago, as the central practice in our lives. Edgar Casey talked about Masonic brotherhoods and that America, when it's at its best, reflects the kind of principles, not that America, he said, will become a Masonic brotherhood, but will reflect some of the principles that could be found there. So whether it's psychic phenomena, whether it's the benefits of massage, whether it is, because Casey, after all, was named or was called the father of holistic health, American holistic health. He was venerated by the director of medicine at Harvard University. All these things that Mr. Casey, I think, is largely, if not completely, responsible for, many people don't tie that back to Edgar Casey. When people talk about reincarnation today, who was one of the leading voices of reincarnation as being a possibility in the Western world? Long before the Maharishi and the Beatles, I mean, Edgar Casey extolled the possible, probable validity of reincarnation. So we see these things everywhere. People don't tie it back necessarily to Edgar Casey, but I would submit it would not be in our consciousness as a nation without an Edgar Casey. He was one of the greatest proponents of intuitive, holistic, parapsychological psi phenomena and thinking of any figure in American history. And my book, America's Next Great Awakening, is basically the merging and the bridging between what has been traditional religion and Christianity and esoteric spirituality, the perennial wisdom that Nicole was referencing before when she said, you know, it's always been here. Mr. Casey tapped into it. He didn't create it, but this perennial wisdom has always been with us for thousands of years and now is emerging and is stepping on the stage to, if not go toe-to-toe with, to work alongside America's predilection to more fundamental thinking. So we're seeing this gap being bridged, and I've mentioned it here a number of times, you know, Virginia Beach is a crucible of sorts. Mm. We are a spiritual crucible here. You have the most documented psychic in American history, Mr. Edgar Cayce, and across town you have the Christian Broadcasting Network, which is, until recently, until his death, Pat Robertson helmed that network, and it was the largest, loudest, and still today, the 700 Club and the Christian Broadcasting Network is the largest Christian voice around the world, not just here, but around the world. Oh, really? And I would say I'd put their power of their voice, you like them or hate them, it doesn't matter. If you're for them or against them, it doesn't matter. The power of that voice rivaled, if not exceeded, Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, and any other, Dwight L. Moody, you can name any great, you know, Christian speaker, evangelist in American history. So that's kind of a bridge that's happening here. And I think what Nicole is doing is reaching out to the community. We're not reaching out in judgment. We're not reaching out in a way that says one way is better than the other. We're here to listen. And I think that's what's going on in America. This polarization, you know, we talk about us being politically divided and environmentally divided and religiously divided. I think it's a division in consciousness. Our politics has become religious and our religion has become political. If you go into a church, people are going to tell you their politics is based maybe not on facts, it's based on what they believe. Mm-hmm. Mm. And so we see this gap, and so, you know, you will see political differences between these kinds of organizations, but there are ways of bridging that gap. And we've done it before in American history, and I think we're going to do it again.
Yeah, well, that's a perfect segue. I want to ask one more question for both of you, but I see Nicole's got something to say on what you just said, so maybe it'll build on it. I hope so. Because this, we are in this time of great divisiveness in this nation. Where people are only listening to one source and they're beginning to believe a set of alternative facts. As we even have that phrase in the culture now. As if facts don't mean anything unless they're part of a theory. I mean, they have to be part of a whole worldview. So how can we begin to mend this divide that's happened in the political nation, and what is the role of spirituality in this healing, if there is a role for spirituality? And I turn it back to you, Nicole.
I really like that question. It's something that I at times have thought about. Why is there, when did this divide occur to such a separation that it seems like the world really has divided itself into like different spheres, basically, right? I think for me, the difference, what religion was meant to be, Ray, Greek, coming from the Septuagint, which is to return, to go back, right? Legare or legion is Latin,
linking
to the source, right? To the beginning. So it was, religion was never meant to divide, but when we begin, when the politics begin to move into religion, which was a big part of it, because before it was just freedom. It was your connection in ancient Egypt, ancient Nubia. It was called, God was called Nature. And we know that that word is coming from nature that we have today.
Yeah.
Right, so there was always this connection. You know, people look at this division as it's my way. And I believe it is this division that religion, like Chris said, and that's a big piece, that choices have become religion. Mm. Our politics have become the religion. And that, of course, is the demise. We've seen that in places like North Korea. We see that in places of absolute dictatorships where man begins to rule and become the God, the big G. Mm-hmm. Not the Jesus, you will become gods. It becomes the big G. Mm-hmm. That literally, if I believe in you, then I can't hear nothing else. And we have this whole thing of can't serve two masters, but we forgot we're serving man who's become a master of men. And I think that has really changed us. We've stopped having using our free will to think rationally. And it's become, as Ernest Holmes would have said, the race consciousness, that everyone's following everybody because I like what I think, you like what I think, therefore we are. Instead of saying, it's good that you don't think like me so I can have a checks and balances, and sometimes even question my own thoughts. We don't want to be questioned anymore as a society. So I believe that spirituality, who are we? J.K. Krishnamurti said it best. Who are you? Who are you outside of the family dynamics? Who are you? Not what you've been taught, not with the society that you're a part of, which is your family, but who are you outside of that and outside of the society that you know you? Who are you? And many of us can't answer that because we've been inculcated into societies within the society. So we don't know who we are. We don't know truly what our truest thought is. We know what we like, which is a perspective. I like broccoli, you might hate it. It's a perspective, it's not reality, right? So when our perspectives become reality, which is our political arena today, that this is it, and so what my perspective doesn't mean anything to you, then I think that we've stopped even upholding the tenet of Jesus, which so many espouse that they follow. Yeah, there is no love today. There's only a few. And it really is that the road will be narrow because there's only a few on that narrow road holding tenets.
So how do we get to love and how do we get to healing?
I think it first takes us to love ourselves.
Okay.
So I think, you know, I mean, I didn't understand that when I was young. I was like, why doesn't this one love me? But I really think that this self-love is not about like, it's about how do I care for me? How do I care for another? How do I stand for you, even if it makes me uncomfortable? How do I protect you when by me protecting you might harm me in the end? How much willing am I to share with you my food when I'm starving myself? It is this selflessness of just care of another. It's just like the size of a mustard seed. Do I just care for you? Can I care for you? In my own, I don't like you. And we have to look at the mirror because birds of a feather flock together. What I don't like is what I don't like about myself. Because I can only associate with what I am, but what I like about me, it's like when you go on a date, you always give the best of you. You never talk about, you know, I have some serious issues, you know, I'm taking this and I'm doing that. No one sits on the first date saying that, and we don't do it to ourselves. And I think it's this being so honest with ourselves, radically honest, as Howard Thurman would speak about. That's liberation theology. Before I can give you the rights, I have to want them myself.
That's beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff.
So, well, one very wise writer, his name is, Glenn Opricio. Perry once said, you become what you hate. And, you know, when we look at what's happened in America, and I know you discuss it in your book, and I have a slightly different take in mind, Glenn, but we talk about how if you were to look at the Republican Party 150 years ago and the Democratic Party, they're like dance partners on the dance floor. They've completely switched places, even in the last, 100 years. So, you know, those things that we focus on, the other, again, there is no other, but again, in these individual bodies, we suspect that's true in a three-dimensional world. But when we continue to focus on the other as being less than, and trust me, as I sit here today, and I love my country, and I have a constitutional background, and I believe in the rule of law, but also remind myself I'm a spiritual being on this planet, I have judgments in my mind. I have concerns about the country going towards authoritarianism. I discuss it in my book. I'm not going to soft soap that. I'm not going to whitewash that. The question then becomes, what can I do? What perspective can I hold? What consciousness will I hold so that is less likely to come about? But occasionally when I watch the news, and I think it's important to watch some news. I know some people say, I don't watch the news. It's like, really? I mean, are you abandoning everything in society? You're part of the collective, kids. You know, I understand we're on our own path, but we're part of the collective. But what am I going to do to raise that collective? What is my contribution to the consciousness of the whole? And yes, I am concerned in this country. So sometimes when I see something in the news, it does upset me. And it does remind me, and I'm thank God for this, and even Christians who might be listening today. Someone once said, if you want to follow Jesus, then you better take some arts and crafts out, because what he did in the temple, overturning those tables, you know, he used some implements because he expressed anger. And I can tell you that I often feel that when I get angry, I realize it's me, it's my triggering. But then there are times where I think you have to allow anger to move you to act in a judicious and enlightened, mm-hmm. you know, factor or basis as much as possible. So yes, as I look at my society, loving America, and I believe this is part of a cycle, and we've been through these cycles before, and we'll get through it. But at the same time, do I see fascistic overtones? Absolutely. Do I see authoritarian overtones? Absolutely. Not completely on the right. There's some both on the left and right. There is some rigid thinking, and maybe that's the woke thinking that mm-hmm. Nicole was talking about. You know, I know better, and I know my, you know, I'm not mm-hmm. willing to listen to you because I certainly know better. Mm-hmm. And that happens on the left and right.
Yeah.
But we are, and again, I'll quote you from your own book, you know, we are as close to fascism as we have ever been. And we're also at the same time as close to a sacred, enlightened America. This could be the next new age of enlightenment that matches what we've been through in other 80-year cycles in the country going back to the revolution. Or we could lapse into fascism.
Mm-hmm. Nicole.
I'm going to say something that is solely my view. My view, not my work view. There have been many oppressed communities not feeling ever heard, not feeling treated well. It is now, because it's affecting everyone, now people want to get woke with whatever side they choose to stand on. Mm-hmm. But there has always been a feeling of hurt, or one leading another one astray, or one not listening or standing up for another group. Native indigenous people, to African Americans, to the Chinese, and we can keep going on and on. It's just now the collective, everyone is now affected. Now people are saying, listen to me. Mm-hmm. Because there's those that have power who want more say. The powers that be are now affected. But it's always been, make no mistake, we've always been a divided country. That's why it's amazing the name of who we are as the United States.
Well, yeah, there's a lot I could say about that, but we're coming to the end of the hour. It's a wonderful, what a wonderful conversation. I just really deeply appreciate where we've gone. I mean, what you were saying before, Nicole, when you were talking about what you project onto another, I mean, that's really what we see as other, what we have rejected in ourselves. You know, it's and it's there that the division happens, you know, and it's people have different ideas of what is correct, but the ability for people to listen deeply for the purpose of understanding, which I hope we've embodied here today in our little dialogue, may that reach out into the cosmos. Because we're not just three people talking here. We're three people opening ourselves to spirit. And that's coming in, and that's moving through us. And may it move out into the world, and may it help awaken and enlighten as it is supposed to be. Thank you so much for who you are as people. It was really a delight. Thank you so much. Thank you. This program is made possible in part by Select Books, Waterside Publications, BizGenics, and the Ecology Prime Media Channel. Executive producer Kenichi Sugihara. Native flute music by Orlando Secatero from the Pathways CD. Liberty song by artist Ron Crowder, written by Ron Crowder, Jim Casey, and Danny Casey. Post-production editing by Kenichi Sugihara. The Circle for Original Thinking is a grassroots think tank whose mission is to seek out the deep origins of contemporary thought in order to remember and restore heart-centered wisdom for humanity and all our relations on Earth. Follow this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Listen Notes, or wherever podcasts are normally heard. For more information, go to originalthinking.us or originalpolitics.us. And you can also find and purchase my books, Original Thinking and Original Politics, there. Thank you for listening. And until next time, many blessings of good health and well-being to all. Thank you so much. Blessings.